your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
day by day,
day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Everybody, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Steve. Thanks for joining us tonight. In just a minute, we're going to start our meditation. Please take a minute to get situated. Shut off your phones, anything that'll make noise or might distract other people. We take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on tonight's step study. If everybody's ready, we'll start the meditation.
All right.
We're going to go ahead and do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it should be in one of the chairs in front of you, or up here. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, for those who are lost, sick, or dying can find your love through me. There is a solution. From the Big Book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Ask Michelle to read A Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important that we know what one is.
Hi, Michelle, recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Michelle.
Blessed for another chance. This is AA Spiritual Experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. It is awful up here. Oh my God, I'm like ready to pass out. Among our rapidly growing memberships of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essential of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
That was amazing. All right, I spent some time introducing Joe last time, and we had a week off. I just really want to hear what he has to say again this week. I've learned a tremendous amount from this guy, and I just want to learn some more tonight. So I'm going to introduce Joe, our speaker for tonight.
So it's awful up here. How do you think I feel? Hold on a second. Oh my goodness, there are people out there. This is sacrilege from the way I was taught, because you never wore a hat. Like in church, you know, when I was growing up, you never did. I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Wednesday night study group. My name is Joe Bear. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here 2 weeks in a row, and just to have an opportunity to spend some time with you about something so intimate and so personal and so powerful that you just wish everybody could just get a taste, you know, just have a taste of this power that we seek. And, most of us, when we get here, we don't have any clue that we need to seek anything. We just, if you're anything like me, I thought that if I just could stop drinking and drugging, that I could manage my life just fine. You all people had a problem managing your lives. That was my problem. And I just didn't get it. You know, there were certain things that I lived life by, that I had this worldview and this philosophy of how to navigate through this thing called life to, you know, for whatever, to become successful, to become popular, to become, you know, established and given credit for things. You know, this whole persona that I was seeking from you, that it all, you know, Bill talks about, you know, going after, chasing certain things that all but cut them to ribbons. And that's really what happened to me. I, you know, last week we talked a lot about, you know, the powerless feature of this disease. And, you know, my internal condition, this thing that started to fester and percolate on the inside from a very early age, and, you know, from the pursuit of being the person that I thought I needed to be, and the mask that I had to wear in order to do that, you know, started to, you know, develop these things on the inside of shame and regret and remorse and fear and loneliness and feeling, you know, inadequate and, you know, always having to seek to perform better, to be better, to just show up better. That it just, you know, it completely took away any identity that I may have had as a little guy. You know, these God-given talents that we're all given. You know, I never worked on those. I worked on other stuff. I worked on stuff that I thought you wanted to see. You know, I think one of the worst things, or one of the things that I felt, or that I pursued so hard in my life, and I don't know where this came from, and I don't know where the drive came from, was it was just to be liked by you. Just to be liked by somebody. And, you know, if you do that long enough, you'll start to feel more and more like a nobody on the inside. And, you know, I had this internal condition going on, and way before I picked up a drink. So I, by the time I picked up a drink, I was looking for a solution to all the things that I felt alienated me from mankind. I just felt completely alone, and booze did that for me. You know, booze was my solution. You know, and then I ventured into other things. But I suppose that you know, we're all here because we're in desperate need of the power that they talk about, seeking a power greater than ourselves that will restore us to sanity. And, you know, to be very clear, to so we can get this out of the way and get this understood, the sanity that they talk about in the second step is not the, is, you know, obviously if they're saying that we need to be restored to sanity, that we are functioning in an insane way. Our minds are functioning in an insane way. And, but what they're not describing is something that happens to us after we drink. In other words, the insanity that we, the state that we're in, the state of mind that we're in, which is in an insane frame of mind, right, is not something that we possess after we drink and drug. The things that we do after we drink and drug are not, is not what they're talking about as far as insanity in the second step. Anybody that drinks and drugs the way we did is going to probably get locked up, probably, you know, commit havoc on their family, probably end up homeless or in treatment or in halfway or wherever we end up, on the street or dead, right? If you drink and drug that way, that's not what they're talking about. Last week, we're all here because we lack the power to overcome alcoholism and drug addiction. In other words, we can stop. Human power can stop us. Human power can help get us stopped. They can lock us up. They can lock us in a closet. They can chain us to something. They can literally help us. They can get us into detox. They can get us into treatment and help us and facilitate us getting stopped. The problem is that they can't keep us stopped. Right? So when I say we lack the power, we lack the power to stay stopped. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, it's not a matter of stopping. Hell, we've all stopped many times. Our problem is we couldn't stay stopped. We could not stop starting. And last week I talked about the internal condition, the thing that drives us and precedes the obsession from literally taking us over. That conversational lie, that conversational thought, whatever it is, that thing that I have when I'm so in chaos and in conflict on the inside because of,
You know, the loneliness, the fear, the shame, the embarrassment, the regret, the future, the past, all that stuff. That the only thing I can think about is what that booze and drugs did for me. It's like Pat says, my sponsor, he says, and you'll hear him next series, I think it's next series or one or two down the road. He says, it's like a black curtain coming down. That in spite of all the devastation, all the destruction and broken hearts and chaotic lives and collateral damage that we commit and the things that we do to ourselves and the places that we end up, all that, that's screaming at us and is following us around, all of a sudden, a black curtain comes down, and the only thing that we can remember is what the booze and drugs did for us, rather than what it did to us. We concoct a lie. It'll be different this time. Nobody will know. Oh, it wasn't that bad. How do you say it wasn't? I don't know how anybody says it wasn't that bad, but we can say that, and we can believe it. Anything to justify and rationalize putting it in our body because we can't take the chaos and the conflict on the inside. It's not about what's going on the outside. It never was. It's not about that. It's about what's going on the inside, the things that we've never really taken care of. The secret stuff. The stuff we don't want anybody to know about. The stuff that's screaming and tormenting us. And there we are, pretending like it's not even it doesn't even exist. Like I'm dying inside, but I can't let you know that. Right? That's what keeps us powerless. That's why there's a step four. That's why, see, this whole thing is an argument as to why we make the decision to seek the power that we don't have. Right? Now, there's probably a few from meeting to meeting that get in here and have, you know, the arrogance and the ego to say, it's not my problem. I can stop. I know I don't have this thing. I ain't really. Well, you're probably here because it's the result of a judge sentencing you here where you have to come here or your parents are going to cut you off from the parachute and you have to be here. So you come and you'll listen, right? We call those slipping through the cracks, right? Where you actually, and listen, you will figure out in a very hard and disturbing way whether you are or whether you're not. The book tells us, look, if you don't think you're a real alcoholic, step over to the nearest bar room, try some controlled drinking. They don't apologize for that. I don't apologize for telling somebody to go get done if they're not willing to do what it takes at all. Go get her done. Finish the job. Right? So we all come in, and most of us, I would say the majority of us, are really seeking this power because we know we're absolutely powerless. And this power lies outside a comfort zone for us. It lies outside of us, and we've never really, most of us have never really approached it in a way that it needs to be approached in order to possess it. You follow me? A lot of us can acknowledge it. We can, you know, I was brought up in an environment where I was taught about God, and I went to school that was about God, and I was told about God, and I thought I understood about God, but I never pursued God. I never pursued a relationship with Him. I never pursued a path that would have it be pleasing and acceptable to Him to show Him that I'm really trying to establish a relationship with Him. I wanted it my way. In all ways. I wanted that relationship to suit me. And that's not how he has it. That's not how he plays the game. I don't believe. I believe it's all about me possessing myself of attributes and things that are pleasing to him so that he'll reward me with the power to stay stopped. Right? But it's out here when I get here. And it's really mind-boggling to even consider approaching this power. We all have a conception. We're all taught something about God growing up. Either we hear it from somebody, we see it on the news, we see it on TV, we see it in shows, whatever. A lot of us are formally introduced to it because we're indoctrinated as children. We're told what we are, and a lot of us think that there's no other way to go. That's who I am, and that's who I'll always be. I can't venture outside that. I can't raise my hand and say, hey, I'd like to go worship in a different way. I'd like to check out the temple instead of going to church this Sunday, mom and dad, and I'm this big. I never did that. I never knew that I had the permission, which is a self-given permission, to seek God in other ways. Right? God is God. But I needed this power because when I got here, I was done. Matter of fact, when I got here, death was way more attractive than living. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to just stop breathing. I hated me. I hated me. I couldn't look at me in the mirror. You know, I was always performing. I was always trying to be who you wanted me. Matter of fact, you were God to me. You had the ability to make me feel like a somebody because I felt like such a nobody. I was pretending to be somebody, feeling like a nobody. And the only person that could give me some solace, some reason for keeping going, you know, for continuing, was you. But it wasn't by being myself. You'd have hated him because I sure hated him. I had to be somebody else. I desperately wanted to be popular and be looked up to and thought of as witty and educated, you know, and the top dog. I was always wanting that. And I'm telling you right now, the peer pressure now kids are going through is amazing. It's amazing. You know, and we're so impressionable when we're children. It's not hard to feel like you're a nobody at all. At all. So, this power lies outside us. Everything that we've been navigating by, everything that we've been consciously understanding in life has come through our five senses. What we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, and what we touch. That's how we navigate through life. We've never navigated from this place that they call the sixth sense. We've always navigated from the five senses. You understand what I'm saying? We never developed any sixth sense ability. At least most of us haven't. I thought that was like for monks and like the mountains and stuff. I really did. I didn't know that like everybody could like do that. I thought you had to go through this really rigid thing to get to that point. And that's not true. A lot of the way I thought it was wasn't the way it was. A lot of the way I think it is still isn't the way it is. I've learned everything in Alcoholics Anonymous about life, about effective living, about authenticity, about empowerment, about God, about all the things that really I like, that give me some sense of understanding. It's not garbage. It's not fake. Right? So, if I know that I'm powerless, and we talked about this last week, how do I know I'm powerless? Well, my God, I mean, when I put it in, I can't stop. I mean, when I put it in my body, whatever it is, and it's addiction. You can develop addiction. Talk to any pain addict, any pain pill addict or pain, you know, that kind of thing. I talked a little bit about my thing last week. You can develop addiction. Your body, you can become addicted. Not so much, you can become addicted, but you have to become addicted physically. And then you become addicted mentally, psychologically. When you get those two components going on, you're in deep doo-doo. You know what I'm saying? Because you can stop using, but your mind is always seeking the relief, always seeking the sense of ease and comfort that comes in a split second by taking it. And when that conflict is not interrupted and not investigated, that we do in the fourth step, you're always going to be sensing a sense of ease and comfort. You know, a lot of people come in here and they make the mistake, well, you know, I'll just, you know, now that I know I can't use, let's go to the casino. Let's do that deal, right? Let's chase the money. Let's, you know, go buy clothes. Let's just, you know, we go to other extremes trying to get a sense of ease and comfort. Most new people in AA try to get the sense of ease and comfort through getting involved with somebody that's just as sick as they are. You know, I'm not going to really elaborate on this, people, but I'm going to tell you something. The quickest way to retox, really, because we don't do a whole heck of a lot of changing between the time we come in and the time we want to get in a relationship, so because we're so unbelievably codependent and so lonely. Somebody just make me feel like a somebody. And we grasp on to the wrong person because we're now in this arena. And this is, like Russell says, it's not Well People's Anonymous. You know what I'm saying? When we first get here, there's a lot of sick people. Right? Most of the fabulous relationships are developed in treatment. Right? People are dying. This is so serious. But it's not just a matter of knowing what the problem is. It's a matter of knowing why. Why do we have to seek the confidence and the safety of another human being? This whole thing is predicated on seeking a relationship with God. The first thing we want to do is go and put a terribly emotional train wreck together and wonder why we didn't get sober. Right? This whole thing demands 100% emotional focus and devotion. And the first thing we throw in is a power not greater than ourselves, but a power other than ourselves. Because she smiled at me. No, think about it. Because she smiled at me, or he smiled at me. Ease and comfort. I feel like somebody's noticing me. How desperate are we when we get here? We are so fractured and so broken when we get here. Anything will suffice. And if we don't know the truth, we're going to cave. We're going to go full throttle into it. And then we're going to end up on the pavement once again or dead. There's not a whole lot of alternatives out there for us that retox. And most of us in this room know that detox, retox routine, that rodeo. But if we're going to come in here and we're going to, first of all, admit that we're powerless, that I can't put it in and I can't stay stopped because of what's going on the inside, I need to get women, you need to get with a woman that is solid in this program and knows this book and will teach you how to get sober and how to incorporate the spiritual principles into your life that will transform you into the butterfly from the caterpillar. And men, it's the same way. The same way. We have got to make sacrifices and we've got to pay some prices. And sometimes we just got to be vulnerable. And we got to stop keeping all that concealment on the inside, or we're going to die from it. We're going to absolutely die from it. Much, much less live through it. I lived through it for years. We got to be devoted. And we've got to know that what we're seeking is going to take many things from me that are uncomfortable. I'm going to have to go to places that are uncomfortable. Because see, this power lies outside my box. Inside my box, I know nothing but pain, degradation, humiliation, embarrassment, feeling less than, feeling like a nobody, feeling like a failure, aloneness, isolation, bitterness, rage. That's what I know in my box. And I only know how to navigate one way when I get here. And then I come in here and they tell me that these are things that I must do, right? Work the steps of recovery. Well, it's not just a matter of reading them in a book, right? This takes a whole devotion, all right? The first thing we learn is powerlessness, what it is to be powerless. We don't have the power to overcome our addiction to alcohol or any other thing, right? And then they say, came to believe, in other words, we're starting from somewhere and we're going somewhere. We're going to come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sane thinking, when it comes to drinking. The sanity, like I said, is not about what happens to us after we drink. It's about what happens inside me, within my skin, stone cold sober. Right? The doctor says we become restless, irritable, discontent, sober. You come in here, you stop drinking and drugging, you become restless, irritable, discontent to the 10th degree. All of a sudden, there's no medication, and all that stuff that's on the inside is just percolating. And we're trying so hard to pretend that it's not, that it doesn't exist. How you doing? I'm great. And be dying, and be dying. How do you think that makes for a good night's sleep? It doesn't, right? So, what then? I have to know that the disease of alcoholism and addiction lies within my skin, whether I'm drinking or not. Right? I know once I take it out of my body, the only thing that will put it back in my body is my mind. What time we got? We're good? Oh, there it is. So I say, look, in the book it says, we come to the point where we're knowing that I'm powerless, knowing that I want to seek this power. The whole thing about there is a solution is about the argument of why it's better, why we need to believe in a power greater than ourselves. No human being, mom, dad, treatment, detox, the judge, no human power has been able to keep a stop. They've helped get a stop, but they haven't been able to keep a stop, right? So they say that we're going to seek this power. And we all, most of us know that the power they're talking about is God, right? We read it, somebody recited it earlier. It says, we have a way out in which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those that suffer. Know this, the feeling of having shared in a common peril, right? Can't stop starting, is only one element that binds us together. It's not the only element. The solution is what binds us together, right? It says, we feel the elimination of our drinking and drugging is but a beginning. I'm ad-libbing a few words in there because most of us are cross-addicted. We feel that the elimination of our drinking and drugging is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lie before us. The principles we're going to incorporate into our life. It says, now, I think most of us know the difference between a moderate drinker, a hard drinker, and a real alcoholic or user. Moderate drinkers can take it or leave it alone, and for any reason they can stop and just not do it again. They're the kind of people that can drink a half a beer and just move on, right? Weird people, right? Then we have the hard drinkers. Now, the hard drinker is like in between the moderate drinker and the real alcoholic. Now, these are the people that look just like us, act violently just like us, get sick just like us, and might even need medical attention like detox just like us. But these people, the difference between these people and us is that if they're given an operative reason, like loss of job, loss of kids, loss of health, whatever, they can do the about face. They can stop or moderate. But what about the real alcoholic? What about the real drug user, right? The person suffering from addiction. Well, they may start off as moderate. They may or may not become continuous hard drinkers or druggers. But at some stage of their drinking and drugging career, they begin to lose all control of their consumption once they begin to use or drink. They lose the choice to be able to stop. They lose the choice to be able to stay stopped. Is that your story? I don't know. You just got to ask yourself that question. It may not be your story, because if you don't think it is, you're going to try it some more. It's that simple, right? It's called a reservation. And what do we do with reservations? We check in. That's what we do with a reservation, right? I I love this part. It says, they may be one of the finest fellows in the world, but let them drink for a day and they frequently become disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. They have a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment. You ever had that happen? Where you got to, listen, you're drinking on a daily basis, but then you got an opportunity to get a job, right? And it's a good job, and you're going for the interview the next day, or even going to court, right? And you can't not get loaded. I've done that many times. He or she is often the person perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor and whatever your drug of choice is, right? But in that respect, they are incredibly dishonest and selfish. They often possess special abilities, skills, and aptitudes, and have a promising career ahead of them. They use their gifts to build up a bright outlook for their family and themselves, and then pull the structure down on their head by a senseless series of sprees. Once this malady or sickness has a real hold, they are a baffled lot, aren't we? We're just like baffled. We'll do anything to stop the pain. There's that obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect they're down for the count. I chased that for a long time. That great obsession that somehow, someday, I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking like normal people. I hated normal people. I hated me. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. See, what we got to understand is it's our lack of power. That's our problem, is a lack of power. We don't have the power to choose whether we're going to do it or not. We're going to do it. We might be able to stop for a day or two or three and then start patting ourselves in the back. And then all of a sudden we're rip-roaring again. Right? So then it says, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching. We do that in four. Once we make the decision to seek the power, right? The leveling of our pride, which comes all the way through this thing. The confession of our shortcomings, right? Which the process requires for a successful consummation. See, many of us never did the things necessary for the successful consummation. Steve talked about the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening as the result. See, once we've done 4 through 9, we have that result. We've gone from caterpillar to butterfly. But the first thing that we've got to get a handle on is this whole power thing. Because we all think we know what the power is and how we got to access it. Don't we? When I came in, I thought I knew what that was saying. Made a decision to go back to church and double down and go 5 or 6 times a week, go to confession like my dad always wanted me to, say the rosary that I never ever said, and then I would be okay. Because that's how I accessed him. That's how I got the prize. And I couldn't stop drinking. It was so shallow and inauthentic. Nothing would have ever happened that way. That's the way I used to approach AA. You know, if I just don't drink and I go to 5 or 6 meetings, I would go to 5 or 6, 7, 8 meetings a week and boast about it to everybody. Hey, I've been to 5 or 6 meetings a week this week already. My God, aren't I so sober? Stark raving idiot. Going to meetings is great. Fellowshipping with fellow alcoholics is great, but it will not remove the obsession to drink alcohol or use drugs. Only God could, and what if he were sought? And they use words like seek him with reckless abandon, like complete abandon, like all in. Are you all in? Are you all in? See, I believe there's certain degrees of the prize. I believe there's certain degrees of this awakening. Based on my commitment and my devotion, I've only caught a glimpse. And believe me, I'm really devoted and I'm really committed to this thing. But I know I've only caught a glimpse. Because there's times my heart is not completely in. Right? There's times when my heart is not completely devoted to 6 and 7, like really, really being willing to give up all my defects of character. There's some that I think might work in certain circumstances. Where I really put my trust and my faith in God. And throw everything else to the wind, right? But I believe there's certain degrees. I believe we're going to get out of this thing exactly what we put into it. And right now, when I get here, I'm dying. And I hope and I pray that everybody gives this thing, you know, as much as they possibly can. And don't throw something into your life that is going to distract you or detach you from the prize. It's so easy. See, back in the day, they called the people that were in AA last gaspers. Last gaspers. They knew they were dying. They knew everything had to change. They didn't want any piece of them anymore, that who they had become. They wanted to experience new life. I believe most of them. That's why we only had 2 short paragraphs on 6 and 7 in the big book. 11 years later, it became a little bit more written about in the 12 and 12. But those people, when they were doing this thing, I believe they were all in, because death was certain. They knew that was it, right? Today it's a little different. Today it's more like a social gathering in many respects, where I can give just a little bit here, give a little bit there, pick and choose what I will do, pick and choose what I won't do, and you're just going to get what you get, right? I believe that this program, if we give it 100%, that we will live a life that is so extraordinary. We will become the individuals that God created us to be, instead of the individuals that we've been fabricating ourselves to be. And we will realize life as we never thought possible. I believe that we will establish possibility, that we'll see possibilities where we won't hesitate to take the risk, because we know we can accomplish it because the power is with us. I know that. So, in the beginning, when we're seeking this power, be willing to be vulnerable. Be willing to investigate what things mean to you. Because when they get into We Agnostics, they're talking about some things that, quite frankly, it's a complete challenge to our belief system. Our belief system is part of what keeps us in bondage. It keeps us, you know, stuck in addiction. Because we won't venture out. We'll refuse. We have these attitudes towards it. We Agnostics says simply, look, the way I think it is, let's take a look at what I've been able to accomplish with all my ability, talent, and skills, my belief system, my ideas, my attitudes, and put it on the table, and what do I got to show for it at the entrance upon AA? In the 12 and 12, they talked about all my scorecards reading 0. That was it. I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing. So anything was a bonus, right? And let's just take a look at what you have been so entrenched in and so attached to that is not working for you, Joe. When it comes to the belief system, they describe these different things. They describe atheists, agnostics. Atheists are people that believe they can prove the non-existence of God, yet they offer no proof. atheists or agnostics are people who are simply without knowledge, without Gnostic knowledge, right? Without knowledge, confused, not so sure that it's not so much that they don't believe in God, they just don't believe that God will have anything to do with them. That was me. That was me, and I was formally taught about religion, right? But it was how I had it all that had me stuck. It was everything that I thought I knew that I never really applied. And it was just not an area that I was really comfortable going into. But I had to understand that that was part of what kept me broken. Because here in step three, people, listen, we're going to make a decision to either seek this power or not seek the power. A lot of us do that, don't we? I know I did. I mouthed it. Yeah, I'll seek. I'm in. And I still held on to being completely powerless. Right? When I make that decision to seek, right? When I make that decision to put God as my father, you know, that I'm the son, he's a director, and I'm the agent, he's going to run my life. I'm going to step into the bathroom, look in the mirror, and fire that idiot that's looking back at me from running my life anymore. Because I am an idiot when it comes to running my life. I've got evidence, right? I got evidence. I've got broken hearts. I've got estranged families. I've got all that mess, broken careers, the whole nine. That I'm not going to let that guy run my life anymore, and then I'm going to give it to him. And I'm going to trust. I've got to, listen, it may be blind, but I'm going to trust my sponsor too, a guy that I see living in a way that I want to experience life. And the first thing that he had me do is do a four-step inventory. He says, okay, you're in? You're really ready to do this? I said, yes, sir, I am. He says, get a pencil. We're going to work. Because no decision is really a decision unless you validate it with action. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Susie and Johnny, they decide to get married. They're going to make some plans. They got to take some action. Susie and Johnny then want to get pregnant. Well, they got to do some things. You know what I'm saying? The action validates the decision. Do you understand what I'm saying? If I'm going to go to California and I'm going to tell you this week, I'm going to California tomorrow, right? There's some things that I've got to do. And then when I come back next week, you say, hey, how was California? I say, oh, I decided not to go. No, you didn't decide nothing, Joe. Nice intention. And isn't that something? We always want people to know us by our intention. We want to be given credit and recognition for our intentions while everybody else is looking at our actions, right? If I'm going to decide I'm in this thing, I need to be doing some things, right? We come to three conclusions, and I'm going to wrap it up here shortly. And we hear them at every meeting, usually every meeting. You don't hear it here. You won't hear it at the Wednesday night study group either until we get to the fifth chapter. But it says something like, in the preceding chapters, we've learned something of alcoholism, right? In the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there's a solution, more about alcoholism. We learn what we need to have, the ingredients necessary to stand in my skin and say, I am definitely powerless over alcohol and know exactly what that means. That I'm an alcoholic and my life has become unmanageable. My thinking has become unmanageable. The decisions I make are unmanageable and know exactly what that means. A. Right? B, that probably no human power could restore me to sanity. That I'll read it because it's right here. Better to read it when you got it in front of you, right? B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, right? And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And we agnostics, we come to understand what it is to have a spiritual experience. Dr. Young described it as where old attitudes, ideas, and beliefs, which is like everything, that were once the guiding force of my life, are suddenly or gradually cast to one side and supplanted with a whole new set. Talking about spiritual principles rather than selfish and self-centered principles, right? Like going from a taker to a giver, that type of thing, right? So we're making that decision, and it says that God, see that God could and would if he were sought, but God could and would, but only if he were sought. People, if we could seek him the way we want to seek him and have it come to and overcome alcoholism, don't you think most of us would do that? We'd go to our comfort zone. But they're saying to seek him in a way that they've got outlined so we can have a different experience. Right? So when we say we're in, we make this decision to seek, we're doing a four-step inventory. You see, you know what it says in the book, the timeline? Next. At once. That's the timeline. Right? The only time that they give us specific in this whole process is after we've done our fifth step, where we go home and we contemplate for an hour. Right? And the other place that they do it, somebody read it in the beginning of the meeting, and I love this. If I can find it without my book falling apart here. To the best of knowledge, my memory. It says that what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. What we're after here is a spiritual awakening, right? We're after the spiritual awakening to overcome alcoholism and drug addiction and to experience a new life. What often takes place in a few months. If you get in here, if you're really committed and you devote your life to overcoming, to doing this, you can do it in a few months. Most of us are pretty busy. We could probably do it in six and be able to handle everything that we need to handle. But there's people that'll drag this thing on forever and never recover. They never recover. Talk a good game, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Right? So, next week we're going to probably talk a little bit more about this and then what's next. So, thanks a lot.
Hey guys, if we could just thank Joe again. That was just amazing. We have a group member celebrating an anniversary tonight, and I was asked to say a few things and present him with a coin. I've got to watch this guy grow, and you know, we were both in the same program when we first came at this thing, and we ended up in the same sober house a while later, and our lives just have crossed so many times that I can't not notice the growth. Mike, come on up and get your 1 year, man.
Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Yeah, this is cool. You know, I don't know, a year ago, if you would have asked me if I'd be sober at this point in time, I would have said no. You know, I didn't know what to do. I know I wanted to die. And, you know, God had other plans. And, you know, the journey's been great. Like, you know, and I'm looking forward to see what else is to come. So thanks.
Want to introduce Fred, our secretary?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the Severn tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Reed to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, my name is Reed. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940 style big book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You guys can just stand up, please, for a moment. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please get with them after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting on the third floor where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you guys, and I'll see you next week.
We have all of, we have tonight's session as well as all the other past sessions available on podcasts for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Big Book study on the third floor, Monday night, same time, 7:15. Those who wish to thank the speaker could line up down the center aisle after the meeting. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. See y'all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to handle.
profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you, I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Getting on my knees puts me back.
And I hope